phenomena that don't fit into our preconceived notions.
If I go back to your peer review, I have marked this point here that there are no physiological gigahertz frequencies in any living organism. This is was one of the complaints, so to speak, or advice by a peer review scientist. And actually, you replied that this is not true. Water absorbs broadly in the gigahertz spectral region. And there is a lot that in the living organism reacts to gigahertz. And I would like to point out to once again about the wave genome that there is research by Anirban Bandyopadhyay based on the microtubules showing that the microtubules is resonant in a 3-band of frequencies from the kilohertz to the megahertz to the gigahertz range. So this is the kilohertz range on the outside bands of the tubulins. And then the second band is the megahertz range. There's an actual absorption. And inside you have the water channel. And that is the gigahertz range. And I think this is very, very strong evidence that anything gigahertz will be very strongly interfering with something as sensitive and minute as even the microtubules. And we know that there is a possible connection to the processing of consciousness through the microtubules. And you have done research on things like these as well. So
yes, and that really intrigues me, you know, but people say, well, the gigahertz is not, or the higher frequencies of 5G is not penetrating, say, deeper than a millimeter or two of the skin.
Yeah.
However, there's also a possibility for re-radiation from certain structures in the skin to deeper tissues in the body.
Ah.
And they're not considering that. And we wrote about this, I think, in the rebuttal as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. Really, the reviewers, many of them did not know very much about, especially about the 5G and the millimeter waves and how they're involved in structures within us.
Exactly. Yeah. We've come to the conclusions in the paper. Perhaps a word on the long COVID, the chronic COVID. Would you relate that also to the 5G?
I didn't put this in the paper, but you know, long COVID is apparently the chronic COVID that did not resolve fully. And many of the symptoms of long COVID are quite parallel to the symptoms of electrosensitivity. Mm-hmm. From wireless, and symptoms such as headaches, anxiety, irritability, insomnia, concentration issues, memory problems, mm-hmm. tinnitus or ringing in the ears, the heart arrhythmias, utter fatigue. It's really hard to know then how much of this is truly due to, say, a persistent virus chronically infecting you, and how much may really be due to the adverse biological effects of wireless exposure, because it's so ubiquitous mm-hmm. throughout our environment.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We don't know the relative contribution.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So if we touch upon some of the other aspects of the pandemic, perhaps we can open our thoughts into different areas of thinking as to how your findings and the reality of a biofield and our interaction with the electromagnetic environment might impact, for example, or have impacts on, as we mentioned, the injections, the mRNA injections. Is there a relationship to that? And what about future pandemics? Can we ever sort out in the future what is a virus and what is perhaps a 5G network impact?
Well, this is a deep question, because we're moving away from just molecular biology into digital biology. And, you know, with DNA as a wave, the work of Dr. and Nobel Prize winner Luc Montagnier and other work in this area, DNA can propagate as information across space and then be reconstituted in an organism or in a test tube of water at some distance. So what really is going on here? Is it a physical virus that's really communicated by coughing and sneezing, and why we've been wearing face masks for almost a couple of years, at least in California? Or is it something that can be propagated through space directly by, say, a network of 4G and or 5G? Becomes a serious question for us to think about.
Serious question. If you follow the work of Luc Montagnier, Peter Gayaev, they have done that. They have actually transmitted viral information through the internet and reconstituted it on the other side. So it's, as you say, a digital transmission that is possible. Maybe even, I would like to throw in, a non-local transmission that is possible through certain fields of overlap or of interaction that may be faster than the speed of light, quantum processes that are involved.
Well, a lot of people have argued that the contagiousness of respiratory viruses has never really been proven adequately. You know, they've swabbed the noses of people with influenza, and then in volunteers who were willing to get such a disease, they swabbed the throats and noses of healthy volunteers, and they didn't get sick. So what really is going on? We think that things are airborne, these diseases, or maybe carried on saliva particles or nose drippings, but the contagion is not so clear. And of course, it's not just about the germ. There's also the biological terrain or the soil of the body. And there was a great argument historically between Louis Pasteur and his contemporary, who said it's all terrain. And he said, no, it's the germ. The germ theory became adopted in medicine, and the biological terrain was relegated to maybe alternative medicine, sadly, because I think probably both are important. And yet we don't regard the soil of the body as being that important in the contagiousness or in the contracting of what's considered an infectious disease.
It's also what you had in your article. The WHO and all of the response to the COVID-19 disregarded this third component, the environment. It's almost part of this terrain discussion, that if you don't look at the embeddedness of life in the different processes, you just overlook most of it. And I think this, what you are bringing back through this work and pointing out the environment, especially the electromagnetic environment, is this awareness and this need to include this in our discussion and in our projection into the future of what could happen and how to, what health is really also in the future.
Well, I think it's sad that conventional medicine has always looked toward artificial drug or other drastic intervention solutions to our problems instead of understanding the innate immune system and how to boost it, not necessarily with drugs, but, you know, it's guided by patents and profit motives largely. And I would say the pandemic was as well. It's clear that there were drugs available that were off patents, the patents had expired. And when something is in that situation, you can't make a lot of money on it, but they can make a lot of money on new things like injections that are totally novel, but dubious. And if they create enough fear in the population and drive the media to push people and coerce them, in fact, toward getting vaccinated, they'll make a lot of money and they'll control people's health. And it's more about control and manipulation of populations than it is really being concerned about our health and how to optimize it. Sadly, the medical system has fallen to that level, at least the conventional medical system. There are plenty of doctors and plenty of alternative and integrative practitioners who want to work in a different mode, but they're being shut out of the medical system as it becomes more and more centralized as a big business. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite concerned about that, that people will have less options and be able to think less and make less choices about the medicine that they want.
Mm-hmm. And that also goes along with this huge concern that especially Catherine Austin Fitz and the Solari team, so to speak, and many others are having about this control grid being established on the basis of vaccine passports or health passports altogether, or our passports, QR codes, digital codes for each one of us that not only include our health information, but the digital information on finances, on all of our data points, that will become much more of a control, and allow for almost the objectivization of the person, so that we are part of a huge system that is calculated and no longer free to make decisions in the whole health question, in how we live our lives, where we travel.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And these vaccine passports, if they come to pass, are purportedly about biosecurity and public health. But in reality, in my opinion, they have nothing to do with that. They're really about control of people and their pocketbooks and their movement on the planet, etc. Mm-hmm. And it's really an invasion of our health sovereignty, which has become one of the issues of our times.
Yeah.
To be able to control what enters our very human essence, especially injected, where you don't have ways of normally reacting to a substance that you may eat. There are many levels of dealing with potential toxicity. But when something is directly injected into the bloodstream and travels throughout the body, you don't have those layers of protection of, let's say, ingestion of something.
Exactly.
So it's a very different situation. And we have components to vaccines that have never before been injected in humans. And we don't understand the safety. A short-term study isn't sufficient. A long-term study for most vaccines has taken a decade. We haven't had a decade. And we have strange substances, from mRNA that's never been injected in humans to synthetic lipids called cationic nanophospholipids. Again, positively charged lipids in nano configurations that have never been injected, as well as graphene and graphene oxide and its derivatives that may serve as adjuvants or provoking the immune response, but also are highly electrical conductive. And one wonders, it's one of those substances that happens to be clear in a nanoparticulate form and highly absorptive of microwaves all the way up to millimeter waves.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what is it going to do? And by the way, this is involved in not only this vaccine or injections, I hate to call them vaccines, but certain flu injectables and a whole host of products in the pipeline that are purportedly vaccines for a lot of diseases that will now be this new format involving messenger RNA, graphene derivatives, and these synthetic lipids. So this is not the only injectable, and it's, of course, it's boosters, etc., but there's a whole schedule of these coming down the pike. And I'm very concerned about adding more and more strange substances into the human body and their interaction. And what are they really doing? What is this really all about? When you consider the level of coerciveness that was done, first waving donuts and monetary rewards if you would go for the vaccine, and then now penalizing the unvaccinated. You can't work, you can't enter this museum, you can't go to a restaurant. And it depends, of course, where you are in the world, but that's my reality here in California.
Yeah, it is my reality here as well in Germany, Austria. It's quite strict still. It's opening a little bit. However, as you were saying, these mRNA platforms, they are now going to be used for all kinds of diseases, diseases that may even have been triggered by the current rollout of injections and all the side effects for cancers and for diabetes and for all kinds of things. They want to use the mRNA platforms. And many contributions by Doctors for COVID Ethics have shown that even the nanolipids themselves are highly toxic, that the whole idea of the premise of using the mRNA is a wrong thinking. It will never lead to immunity if you inject mRNA, as Dr. Palmer was pointing out recently together with Dr. Sujirit Bhakti.
And there's some evidence now that the people who were vaccinated and especially got multiple injections for COVID are now at higher risk for COVID infection than the unvaccinated. So what really have we achieved? Everybody got vaccinated who did, saying, I want a normal life. Well, life is not returning to normal for anyone. Still wearing masks, still isolating, still standing 6 feet away, still concerned about infection. So what really is this movement for these injections all about?
And it raises also the question of the origin of the virus. There are many questions raised about this. And the late Dr. Luc Montagnier, who only recently died, and I've seen pictures in France where there was almost no mention of him in the news, that this great grand scientist died, but there were thousands of people at his funeral. So there is an outpouring of respect to him from the population, from the people who know. And so he raised the flag very early because he saw certain sequences of the HIV virus in the SARS-CoV-2 virus. How does it get there? Certainly not from a bat gene jumping into a human interaction and then suddenly going worldwide. This would have to be come from a laboratory, and maybe even it's either accidental or intentional.
When there were several viruses brought together, apparently in the making of SARS-CoV-2, it becomes very improbable that this occurred in nature.
Yeah.
And much more likely that it was done in laboratories. But, you know, if you follow the money in the United States, there was research going on funded by the U.S. National Institutes of Health at, I think, University of North Carolina. And then there was some concern about gain of function research and some ruling during the Obama administration that became impossible to continue this work in the U.S. But if you follow the money, and I did early on, I think this was later removed from the NIH website, but I did see that money went to a nonprofit organization in New York City that then funded Wuhan Virology Laboratory, and money then flowed from the New York nonprofit to an apparent consortium that they had with Wuhan Virus Institute to continue the so-called gain of function research, which means making the virus more and more virulent.
Yes.
Literally making a bioweapon in a laboratory.
Yes. And making it jump on humans and not on bats only, or stay within the other species. Yeah.
So yes, which can be done with cell culture, human cell cultures.
Yes.
Exactly.
And the fact that these things are done at all is, for the normal citizen, is just to wrap your mind around it, and then to see it possibly used in a worldwide propaganda That makes me think of what could follow in the future in terms of other pandemics and uses, especially now, as we said, with the 5G satellites being up, and what else can ride on the modulations of these frequencies that are interacting, and how are we primed now to interact with these frequencies through the injections perhaps, and there's lots of unanswered questions that we could follow here.
Yes, there are absolutely a lot of unanswered questions. And it must be pointed out that this made it impossible for a person to perform informed consent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the literature of the injections was often a blank piece of paper.
Yes.
There were patents, but there were trade secrets where there were other constituents not spoken to them, and that won't be spoken for years, mm-hmm. according to the desires of these pharmaceutical companies and their deals with the FDA, at least in the United States. And so how could a person perform informed consent? Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot know the influence of these very novel things on your health. And you don't even know what else is in there that you don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So it became impossible. And it became, to me, absurd that they would be so coercive to push these injections on the entire world without
unheard of
these understandings
yeah.
in place.
Mm-hmm. If
and
I
certainly for a disease that was not even that problematic, that was slightly worse than the flu, perhaps, in terms of lethality or symptomatology.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became more and more ludicrous
mm-hmm.
to recognize what was going on at a global level
mm-hmm.
and what really was the agenda. It seemed the agenda seemed more to get these vaccines inside bodies
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason
mm-hmm.
and to move a population in a certain direction through fear and coercion.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And perhaps for a certain reason, we may find out eventually the reason, and may be connected with the 5G network. I would like to show, just to conclude also, one more thing, namely we have had pictures of dark field microscopy, also from Germany, dark field microscopy on vaccinated people, found very, very interesting objects. This is material that one of the doctors for COVID ethics, Dr. Eva Maria Schottow, has shared with us. This is one of the objects that is unusual. And these are unlikely to be just, you know, pollutions, because that can happen, of course. But these are experienced investigators, practitioners who do this for decades, this type of blood analysis, as you have done. And you would probably also know if you see something for the first time, or if this could be a normal pollutant in the blood sample, is another of these objects, which I think is quite remarkable. I don't know if you want to comment on this. It's a little bit difficult to comment on, because we cannot also name the practitioners. They need to be protected. Because it's still not easy to talk about this. Here is an object that is seen amongst the very large amongst the blood cells. And if you zoom in, second magnification and the third magnification actually reflects, it's reflecting. And that's quite unusual. And it is from blood of injected people. So,
yes, there are some very strange things there that I've never seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done live blood analysis and research for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are these photos. There are others I've also seen mm-hmm. that have passed by me on the internet. And so people are accumulating evidence. It needs to be done so that we know the scale of magnification would be helpful. And some of the other conditions of the persons being whose blood samples are being taken.
Of course.
And
of course.
The timing of how many minutes after blood draw.
Exactly.
Those would be very important pieces of information in order to, let's say, deduce what's happening in some of those photos.
Yes. And I appreciate your stance, your scientific stance on this, as you always maintain the critical thinking and yet keep an open mind onto all these other questions that are possible. One more question, if I may, before we conclude, that I have is, because you mentioned the ion channels, and this is how wireless radiation is actually opening the cell membranes by opening these voltage ion channels in the membrane. And there is research that I mentioned in my NanoBot Solari report. I did two reports on that. The second one is showing the work of Dr. Michael Levin from Tufts University. And what he is doing, he is artificially changing the voltage potential on the surface of membranes of embryonic cells, and by changing them at will is changing the morphology of the growing organism. So what he has found is a link between the voltage pattern that is mediated by these ions and ion channels on the surface of membranes of cells that are developing, and the ultimate features such as limbs or organs that are grown. And he can grow by manipulating the voltage patterns in the embryo, for example, another limb on another position in the body, or even an eye can be placed there, which to me opens a very, very, you know, maybe far out question, but if there is this whole network of 5G now working on our ion uptake and communication and processing, could there be also an interference, or maybe even something like a, ultimately it's a military grade technology, ultimately a communication that brings forth something very new, some different morphology in organisms?
Well, I have to say, I suspect that a lot of this is a movement toward the transhumanism, which, you know, I always thought the future would be human beings and some robots like Sophia, the rather famous female type robot. And we'd have robots entering society, and maybe we won't be able to tell the difference. But rather, it seems to me that somebody has a plan to change us from the inside out into humans 2.0 with the introduction of gene therapy. Means literally stuff to change your genes, or at least the epigenetics, to change some inheritable aspect of human. And then with the introduction of materials like graphene or graphene oxide into these injectables, some direct interaction with wireless communication radiation from 5G and beyond, the 6G. And I mean, they plan for 2030 to have us, the internet of bodies, connected by means of, I mean, that's a plan that we've heard them talk about. And they're not going to stop with 6G. I can't imagine what is 7G or beyond. But
I was thinking about 7G as the internet of energy bodies. I don't think it stops with the physical. I actually am more with you there in the biofield, that there's even beyond the biofield, there's certain layers of intelligence, of life that we need to explore.
And I hope we have time to talk about those etheric bodies maybe in another interview.
I hope
because
so
I agree with you, and I think that's the whole realm beyond the physical. But right now, with the paradigm of scientific materialism, they're focused on what can we do to remodel this God given creation and made in the image of God, nature and humanity. To me, it's the work of dark forces that want to diminish God's great creation and make it something machine-like.
The Steiner philosophy that Catherine also sometimes mentions, especially with Thomas Meyer, is of the opinion that there is now this time of the Ahriman, and the Ahriman is one of the manifestations of the oppositionary force, the dark force, oppositionary to the Christ forces, that has this intention of materializing, digitizing, machine, making a machine of life. And that exactly is going on. And by that, we lose all of the sensitivity of life, and we lose all of the freedom, the free will that is given in the original creation. And I think we may lose something that is also there in that being created according to a divine image, namely a type of a higher evolution. Not just a normal human evolution on this same planet, but there may be a future of a higher evolution that we may be blocking. And all the sacred literature of all cultures are speaking of contact with higher intelligence. And this is never even thought about. And I feel that an internet of energy bodies would have to be connected with the higher beings and not just with the material overlords that are controlling us.
I agree with you. That's intriguing, isn't it? Yes.
Well,
I know you say you wanted to round it up, but I have a few topics that I hope we've covered.
I would love to.
Because I do manage a nonprofit laboratory that's 25 years old, and we are moving forward with some projects that are, some of which are quite relevant to our conversation here, although we're not working on COVID. But we are trying to develop a people's meter for 5G, because right now there's absolutely nothing that you can get short of spending many thousands of dollars on military grade equipment to measure anything beyond 8 gigahertz. And so the rollout is upon us. And what are people going to do? So we're in the process of finalizing a people's meter for that will be useful to the ordinary citizen as well as researchers to understand particular bands and even some of the modulations associated with those, so we can understand really this complex picture of 5G signals all around us. It will also measure 4G because 3G will be left behind now, and 4G and 5G will be the frequencies of the next probably 8 years until they move into 6G. I'm also looking for protective solutions beyond shielding that I mentioned or earthing, which I think are very viable. But I have found nothing that works 100% for people, for all people all of the time, as you might expect. People are complicated, and this is a complex problem with many facets. So a lot of people come to me and say, I put the sticker on the backside of my cell phone. Am I protected? And they're holding the phone like this, making calls, thinking they're fully protected, when I say, show me the evidence. Is there a peer-reviewed publication by independent scientists who have shown that on a certain number of humans that this is protecting them, and what outcome measure did they use, et cetera? Lots of questions and no substantial research on virtually all of these products. So I'm undertaking some studies on some of these products and some of my own ilk, so that we can understand more about what helps protect people against the adverse effects of wireless exposure.
Fantastic.
Yes. And then we have another project, but still in the planning phase, and that is we want to build a white zone ranch. What does that mean? by a white zone, I mean a place where that is as microwave free as we can make it. I recognize the satellites blasting Earth may be problematic, but we can also use mylar in the ceiling or paint the ceilings with special paint to block much of that radiation. But we want something free from microwaves and wired with optical fiber and maybe infrared communications locally as a sanctuary for electrosensitive persons. Mm-hmm. And we're all moving toward greater electrosensitivity. There is a tendency that the more you get exposed to these radiations, then you start getting sensitive, just like exposure to chemicals. Unusual new chemicals introduced in the environment. People get exposed chronically and then they get sensitive. So we're headed toward more and more electrosensitivity, and we've got to be prepared for that and have a place for people to come as the sanctuary, maybe a hotel. And we can also study then the, the environment and people and their response to these waves. Because once we blanket the Earth with 5G frequencies, where can anyone go?
Underground.
And where can we study? Where can we have a place that's a control environment if we don't set up such a white zone ranch? So right now I want us to say this because we need business partners. We're looking for a combination of philanthropy because we're a nonprofit, and also investors because some of this will be for profit, in order that we can purchase enough land with a buffer zone around it and in some region to make it a microwave free region so that we can carry this forth.
That is inspiring, yeah. Beverly. This is really inspiring. It will be a model community, model place for hopefully many in the world. I actually believe that we will have several of these places and people will naturally find they need to create this type of form of living and sharing and perhaps localized interaction and no longer so much interacting with the digital currency, with the digital communication and with the greater networks that enslaves us. That's really, really inspiring. And what is your website? Do you want to give to people how to contact you, perhaps?
Yes, I do. But I'd also like to make a statement about my overall feeling about humanity at this pivotal time.
Because thank you.
People yes. may hear this and say, oh, my God, things are pretty hopeless. This is formidable. It's so big a problem. It's worldwide. And just put their heads in the sand like an ostrich.
Yeah.
And I don't want to leave people with that feeling.
Wonderful.
Because personally, I've never felt more positive about humanity at this, as it is in this present challenging time, because I feel people are finally waking up. Mm-hmm. They're waking up to the reality about previously trusted institutions and so-called reputable leaders that they may have voted for and held in high esteem that are proving to be part of the problem. And this is so important that people wake up and do something on their own and recognize that solutions are probably not going to come from the powers that presently be mm-hmm. and from the outside of ourselves. In other words, we need to bootstrap ourselves in novel ways and come up with creative solutions. So I really want people to focus on that and what it means to be free, sovereign beings, what it means to exercise creative thought and free will and the power of prayer, especially in groups, whether it's in a church or not is irrelevant. But there is a power in collective thought and prayer. And now it's time to start realizing that power. And I know this from the science, but I also know it personally, deep inside. I know it intuitively, and I know it's our next step.
Yeah.
We need to recover our spirituality because we have strayed in many places, individually and collectively. The world has strayed far from its origins, the primitive tribes that had these connections. We can recover this. And in doing so, I think we will recognize that we've been born into an extraordinary time. It's truly challenging, but we're all here for a purpose, and that we now need to go deep within and figure out what it is that we need to bring forth, work together to help create a world of peace, prosperity, and self-expression for everybody.
Beautiful.
So I want to leave people on a positive thought.
And I totally agree with you, Beverly, and this. And thank you so much also for bringing up prayer and that aspect of what we can do and that spiritual component in our lives. And I agree with you. It is a time where people are waking up, where they regain that lost power that we have given over to TV or whatever. It is within us. It is because we are divinely created and because we have this power of seeing a higher purpose in life. And if we come together through these frequencies of prayer and through a higher mind, I think we can't do anything better. And I hope to meet you again, hopefully, as we discuss this further in terms of the biofield and in terms of perhaps what we can do in terms of prayer, even if you're interested
so
in consciousness.
My ways to contact me, I have a couple of websites, not quite up to date, but hope to get them there soon. brubik.com, that's brubik.com, mm-hmm. and Frontier Sciences, that's an S on the end, .org.
Okay.
And info@frontiersciences.org is a good email address.
To reach you. And people can reach you directly, and I hope they will. And I can't thank you enough, Beverly, for this very exciting conversation and for this very, very important piece of work that you have published and have gone through 10 months of peer review exercise. We really thank you because it allows us to open the conversation on all of these issues as we have done today. And hopefully further conversations will follow with other people.
Yes, I hope so. And thank you so much, Ulrika, for really a wonderful interview and a great opportunity for me to express in depth some of my work. You've been extremely facilitative in bringing that forth.
Thank you for doing this for us. And so we'll sign off and see you hopefully soon. Thank you, Beverly.
Thank you.